You're listening to Keystone Cold Cases, a podcast where we reignite cold cases across Pennsylvania.
We want to thank Brood Awakening for their donation to our recent live event. Brood Awakening is a local coffee shop in Warriorsford, Pennsylvania. They are located at 306 Main Street and open every day, 8 a.m. to 2 p.m. This year is their 10th anniversary. Stop by for all kinds of coffee, smoothies, breakfast sandwiches, lunch sandwiches, snacks, desserts, and more. Thank you so much, Brood Awakening.
Hey, this is Caitlin.
Hey, it's Shan.
Hey, it's Shannon. So my episode is the disappearance of Fawn Marie Mountain. On November 25th of 2012, Fawn and her girlfriend Heather Divert had gone to Heather's parents' house and butcher shop. The next day was the first day of buck hunting season, so they were prepping the butcher shop along with Heather's parents, Heather's brother Mike, and his girlfriend Stephanie. So Heather, Fawn, Mike, and Stephanie all lived in the same trailer park in Claysburg. So when they were done at the butcher shop, they all returned home together, and they had were all planning to go back the next day to do some more prep work.
Where is Claysburg?
Claysburg is in Greenfield Township, which is in Blair County.
Okay.
It's a little bit further west. I seem to pick all the western PA cases. So the next morning, Stephanie came outside of her trailer and saw Heather outside of Heather's trailer talking with her parents. Since they were all supposed to go back to the butcher shop, it was odd that Heather's parents were there. So Stephanie went over and asked Heather, you know, where Fawn was. And Heather told her that when she woke up around like 2, 3 a.m. to use the bathroom, Fawn was gone and Heather hadn't seen her since. So there was a couple of suspicious things about this. First of all, Fawn had no means of transportation. Like she could not, you know, she did not have a car. I don't even think she had a driver's license. And Heather and Stephanie, when Heather wasn't available, they were her main means of transportation. And the other odd thing was that all of Fawn's belongings were still there. Now, Fawn had a stillborn daughter, you know, a few years back, and she had her ashes that she kept with her, and they were still in the trailer, too. So if she had taken off, she would not have gone anywhere without them. During one separation from Heather, Fawn actually tried to get in and retrieve the ashes and some other belongings, and she was charged with burglary. So the fact that her stuff was still there was still, you know, especially the ashes, like other stuff, maybe she would have just, you know, said, see ya. But yeah.
Heather was her girlfriend?
Heather's the girlfriend, yes.
Okay.
So I talked to Fawn's cousin, Bridget, who runs the Facebook page dedicated to finding Fawn, and had a real good conversation with her, you know, about Fawn, about Fawn's upbringing, about the relationship with Heather. So Fawn and Bridget, they're actually step cousins, but they grew up together essentially and were more like sisters. So they did spend a lot of time together, you know, during their formative years. And then when Bridget gave birth to her daughter, Fawn spent, you know, a lot of time with them, you know, helping Bridget, you know, spending time with the baby. So she was there a lot until Bridget's father attempted to assault her. And then she kind of stopped coming around, and then they kind of, you know, became estranged from that point on. According to Bridget, the family's background is one that's like repeat cycles of abuse from, you know, different family members, you know, complicity from other family members about the abuse that was occurring. And then what Bridget referred to as intellectual deficit. So, you know, maybe just not enough for any of them to be able to break the cycle.
So, and probably easily like controlled or manipulated.
Exactly. Exactly. So Fawn was on disability and she couldn't work, and she was drawn to her relationships that like eventually became abusive, and one of which caused her to lose her two children. And these two children were, from a relationship after her stillborn daughter. So, but she was working to get her kids back, and then she met Heather. So Heather was actually Fawn's first same-sex relationship. And Bridget believes that Fawn mistook Heather's possessiveness for being protective because she didn't have that growing up. So she leaned into that aspect of the relationship because it was probably like the first time she actually felt safe.
Yeah, she probably felt like somebody was like taking care of her, like, trying to
Exactly.
help
And
her.
yeah, and I'm sure, if Heather knew the past, that was something that she could, use to, manipulate the situation too, and gain that trust early on. So Heather has a now well-documented history of domestic violence. She had some past girlfriends that had been abused by her. One was had to resort to writing her father a letter for help because she couldn't contact him otherwise while she was under Heather's control. She was able to eventually get away, but Heather made threats against her family.
Wow.
So,
And that's so common
So
to like separate.
she was isolating them.
Exactly. So Fawn had been treated several times for injuries inflicted by Heather, including one choking incident, according to Fawn's mother, Dorothy. And since Stephanie was Fawn's main means of transportation whenever she tried to get away from Heather, Heather or Stephanie and Mike's place was the first place that Heather would show up when Fawn was not like, was when she couldn't find her, when she wasn't around. Stephanie also suffered abuse at the hands of Mike and Mike's mother, Lois. So, there's a whole like there's like it's like this tree and branches of abuse like sur surrounding this group of people.
So who was Stephanie to her again?
Stephanie is Heather's brother's girlfriend, and they lived in the same trailer park in Claysburg. And Stephanie was, essentially like kind of like, I guess, for lack of a better word, like a lifeline for Fawn, and would be, like support her if she needed to get away from Heather, she'd take her. So I guess kind of like a kindred spirit, if you will, because they were both, in these, relationships with these siblings that were, controlling and abusive. So Heather's possessiveness went so far as to convince Fawn to cut ties with her family, and she even filed a restraining order against her mother, Dorothy, in 2011.
Did
But
they grant it?
yes.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Do
And
we
she
know, was she a part of like the abuse cycle with Fawn?
I don't think she was abusive. She might have been,
Covering up or aware and
or
not.
complacent, or just maybe not aware, maybe in her own cycle.
Yeah, that's fair.
So Fawn and Dorothy, did have a, an argumentative, I guess, type of relationship, but she still stayed in contact with her. In October of 2012, Fawn left Heather once again and went to Dorothy's. And then when Heather found out that Fawn was there, she called the police to enforce the restraining order, and that resulted in Dorothy spending the weekend in jail. So,
Even
and this
though
was.
it was Fawn went on her
Yep.
own.
Yep.
That's
I
awful.
mean, it's like, wait, what?
I
I don't
didn't
know.
know
I don't have any
that
words.
I didn't know that like someone else could like rat out somebody going against the order, like the other than the two people involved. Like if I have a restraining order against someone, Like, I would assume only I could. I don't know why I thought that, but good to know.
Yeah. But that's what you know, I thought, too. I thought, like, only the person who got the restraining order could enforce. Like, if you went there, that's, I guess, on you for going there. So how does that get the other person in trouble? You know what I mean?
Yeah. And of course, we don't know what kind of, you know, tall tales Heather might have spun to the police.
Right.
In the reporting of the restraining order violation. So, you know, it could have been, you know, something that, you know, maybe she said Dorothy took Fawn and brought her back to her house. Something like that, where they just would have, I guess, acted rather than questioned it. You know? So this brings us to the last known sighting of Fawn, which was in November of 2012 at Heather's trailer. So in the weeks that followed her disappearance, you know, Heather was calm and really unconcerned about her absence, which, you know, being someone that's, you know, possessive and has to have control of somebody, you're not going to act, you're not going to be unconcerned if they all of a sudden take off. You know, in the middle of the night, usually that's kind of like some sort of trigger because they have now lost control, right?
Mm-hmm.
So a week after Fawn disappeared, the Dibert family began remodeling the trailer. Surprise, surprise. And that included tearing up the floor. But eventually, Heather was later, you know, evicted from the trailer. Now, she did own the trailer, but she may not have had the means to move it and likely did not own the land. She probably paid ground rent, maybe was behind on the ground rent, and was getting evicted from the trailer park. So she left the trailer, but stripped it, knowing that if she left the trailer, the owner would eventually like demolish and burn it. So, you know, take out what you need. He's going to kind of do the rest of the dirty work. And that would, you know, if there were any evidence that left in that trailer, it'd be, you know, it'd be long gone once that happened. So.
I just don't get why anyone thinks that doesn't tip everyone else off immediately. Oh, someone who lived in my home disappeared and now I'm going to remodel. I'm not going to worry about it. And I'm going to redo my kitchen. Like, what?
Yeah. And then we don't pay the ground rent and we get evicted. So.
Right. Like,
you know what I mean?
They really think everyone else is stupid.
So they're perfectly okay with leaving that place, it sounds like.
Right.
After remodeling it, like, why remodel it and leave? I mean, unless you're trying to sell it, but it sounds like they just didn't pay the rent, so it sounds kind of crazy to spend money remodeling it and then just not pay your rent and leave.
Right. So Fawn's family was not aware that she was missing until 2015. So at that time, they were trying to reach her. Because her stepfather, Paul, was hospitalized. And Bridget told me that Paul was like one of the few adults in her life that treated her well. Like, you know, he's her brother's, Fawn's brother's, you know, biological father. So her stepfather. But, you know, they got along. So, you know, he was decent to her. So they, you know, wanted her to, you know, at least have the chance to come see him. And, you know, Heather told everybody that she took off. So they actually went to Heather's trailer at the time. And she said that Fawn took off 3 years earlier.
Oh, wow. It was a 3 year.
Right.
3 years later. That's a long time. I mean, by then, by contacting the police then, what can you really find at that point?
Did they believe her that she took off, or did they think something bad happened?
I don't think anybody believed anything that came out of Heather's mouth. So I guess at that point you can maybe hope that she did, you know, she did get away and, you know, and is, you know, kind of keeping a low profile somewhere so that Heather doesn't find her, you know.
Right.
So Heather eventually moved out to the Erie area and then came back a few months later with a girlfriend whom she did eventually marry. But during the course of that time, her stories about Fawn changed. Like, she told some people that Fawn was in prison in Ohio, that Ohio Corrections had reached out to Heather to, you know, saying that Fawn was going to be released and, you know, let's, you know, here's what needs to be done for us to release her. And she was like, no, I'm not having her back in my home. And then she told other people Fawn was a sex worker in New York. And, you know, knowing that Fawn had no means of transportation, how's she getting to Ohio and New York, and how's she bebopping all around, you know, the Northeast? Well,
and her being an inmate is traceable. Like, that's exactly a trackable data point to Ohio.
Exactly.
Somebody could look that up and know it's a lie.
Yeah.
So if they could catch her lying, like, it's simple. If they had, you know, someone told them, hey, she told me that someone told her that she was an inmate, like, you would think they would have at least some evidence against her, but I guess it would just be hearsay, so they probably couldn't really charge her with anything unless they had something more.
So, yeah, she's just, you know, this one's a sketchy chick. So this brings us back to Heather and all of the juicy tidbits happening with her right now. So in this year, 2024, she was arrested for aggravated arson and conspiracy to commit murder, among other felony charges. She offered drugs and money to a guy named Zachary Sellers in exchange for setting fire to the house in which her wife was staying in Bedford County. So her wife left her, was staying in a house with family, and Heather decided that let's set them on fire.
Did she die?
No. Everybody got out. You know, it was a failure, but this guy Zachary, is testifying against her for the prosecution. He's not getting any type of plea deal. He hasn't made any deal. He's just doing it. He's already, I think, been, you know, sentenced or at least, you know, pled. So he's not benefiting from his testimony from the last I read. So,
but Fawn left and just, I don't know. It's fine. I'm not upset.
Exactly.
Like, that doesn't add up.
And this one leaves and we're going to burn your house down. Like, and other family members in it, you know, not just her.
Right.
So clearly she's capable of killing somebody. No problem.
Oh, for sure. She's unhinged. She's facing, mm-hmm. I think it's like 32 felony counts.
Wow.
Yeah. So, but the family's hopeful that maybe, you know, Heather will provide details on Fawn's whereabouts and, you know, give them some sort of closure or resolution. But, you know, somebody like that, you know, there's nothing in it for her to disclose any of that information because they got nothing on her, right? So, you know,
Was anyone else living at the trailer with Heather and Fawn at the time that she went missing? Like, was there other people who lived there?
No, from what I understand, it was just the two of them.
Okay, so there wouldn't even be really witnesses or anything to try and interview.
Right. Right. And, you know, my discussion with Bridget and like, I, you know, she's been in touch with, you know, like with Stephanie, with some of the other, you know, women that Heather's been involved with. So, I know Stephanie, I think is not involved with that family anymore, which is, you know, which is great. But, you know, apparently the mom was kind of like just as guilty and just as, you know, rotten, I guess, to them as, you know, as Heather and Mike were. So
I was just reading about it as we were show, and it says, you know who Kendall Ray is? She's a pretty popular YouTube.
Mm-hmm. I think I've come across her.
she did an episode about Fawn, and they said it like racked over 1.6 million views, and wow. She donated like 12,000 to Fawn's GoFundMe for like helping solve the case. That's awesome.
Oh, that's awesome. I hope they can figure something out, you know, or get Heather to talk, because this is just, for the families, it's just awful.
Yeah, hopefully somebody knows something. Maybe she told somebody or, you know, talked about it at one point and somebody just happens to see or hear a show about it and comes forward, hopefully.
Yeah. So Fawn, so description of Fawn, she's a white female, approximately 5'2 and 105 pounds at the time. So she had brown hair and blue eyes. She has her ears and lips pierced. She has a large tattoo on her back of an angel with wings and the words R.I.P. Kaydin, and that's Kaydin spelled K-A-Y-D-I-N. And a tattoo of the name Braydin, which is B-R-A-Y-D-I-N, on her neck. She was 25 at the time of her disappearance. And if anyone has any information regarding this incident, or, if somebody slipped up and said something, you can contact State Police Troop G in Hollidaysburg at 814-696-6100. You can speak to Trooper Martini, or you can anonymously contact Pennsylvania Crime Stoppers at 1-800-4-PA-TIPS or online at www.p3tips.com, and we'll have the link in our blog post on the website.
And they seem to have a pretty nice reward too, so hopefully that could help bring forward some information.
Yeah, and I was gonna say, Shannon, can we link the GoFundMe, because it seems like they're raising money to like put Facebook ads out to spread the word in the area to just like reach more people. So if that's something people might be able to do.
Yep, I'll put that all out on the website when we drop this episode.
Hi there, we're Lauren
and Kenzie,
the co-hosts of A Scary State Podcast.
Each week we cover a different state in the U.S. and we cover anything from murder mysteries,
strange disappearances,
paranormal activity,
cryptids,
or urban legends.
So if you're interested in learning about the spooky things in your state, give us a listen.
New episodes come out every Wednesday and you can find us anywhere you get your podcasts.
Stay scary.
Stay safe.
That's all we have for this episode of the Keystone Cold Cases podcast. Thank you so much for listening, and please consider leaving us a review wherever you get your podcasts. If you want to find out more information about the podcast, the hosts, and the cases we cover, or if you want to suggest a case, please visit us at kccpod.com or send us an email at keystonecoldcases@gmail.com. You can also follow us on Facebook at Keystone Cold Cases and on Instagram and TikTok at KCCPod. Please remember never to reach out to family or friends of the victims, only to law enforcement if you have any tips. This episode was researched and hosted by me, Shannon. Find all of our sources, social info, and contact information at KCCPod. Theme music by Darren Makins and production assistance from Shannon Bickle. Join us again next week for another case to sleuth out.